Hi everyone, I'm Aaron Noonan. Welcome to the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Timken, a world leader in bearings and mechanical power transmission products and services. Now this week we sit down with someone who's been one of the main voices of motorsport in Australia for over two decades, broadcaster, journalist and commentator Greg Rust. Now in the second part of our chat, Rusty opens up about a major health scare that he had back in 2011, which led to a chance meeting with our late great friend Jason Richards at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. It's a story I don't think he's told very much publicly, so it's a very big thank you to Rusty for sharing it with us. He also tells a ripping story about his dog Buster and an infamous visit that Buster made to the Channel 10 studios back in the day. You have to hear it to believe it. Plus, we ask him your National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions and put him against the clock in our traditional Motor Focus Top 10 shootout. Now, when Rusty dropped by V8 Sleuth HQ, it was on the Tuesday before the 2020 Formula One Australian Grand Prix. And as you'll all know, by the end of that week, the world had changed pretty significantly with the increasing health and safety measures around COVID-19, none of which, I should stress, were in place when we had this chat. So keep that in mind as you listen, and we hope you're all staying safe and healthy, washing your hands, staying at home, and socially distancing when you have to head out. So here we go. Buckle up, time to start. Part two, Greg Rust on the V8 Sleuth podcast with steering wheel attached, powered by Timken. You and I have constant discussions in our lives about our dogs.
Yes.
It's a very important part of our world.
Yes.
Usually about the shit that they've caused and the dramas and the things they've chewed. There's a story, and I don't know the story, but I've heard it's been referenced by some of our fans on socials, and and you've mentioned it before we came on air. What's the story about Buster the dog working with you at Channel 10?
I have two dogs. Buster, who's a cross Springer Spaniel Border Collie. I love him. He's nearly 10. And Indy, the Weimaraner. So she's a bit of a new addition. But this is about Buster. So Daz and I are doing MotoGP from the Channel 10 studio back in whatever year it was. And Sarah and the kids were away. So Beatty messages me and says, bring Buster in, mate. It's 4 a.m. You know, we're doing Laguna Seca or something or other. And no one's here, mate. No one will know. I want to see Buster. Okay. So I cave into pressure. Peer pressure. I'm thinking, well, there's no one in at Channel 10. So I bring Buster in. In we go. And I knew I could get into the makeup from the car park relatively easily. I wasn't going to take him upstairs into sort of management areas or whatever. So in we go, and Buster's barking at Daryl, and he's barking at Renee, the makeup girl. And Daryl is like Crocodile Dundee, mate, with the hand movements, you know. He's trying to calm Buster down, and Buster, you know, like he fully fell under Daryl's spell. And I said, okay, I'm going to go and put him back in the car now. I'll give him a bowl of water and he'll be okay while we're working. And I'm not taking him into studio. And okay. So I take him back to the lift to go down to the car, and he lays the biggest nugget ever near the doorway to the lift. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like a cat on a hot tin roof. So I dive to the men's bathroom to go and get some paper to clean this up. And when I come back, Buster's gone. I'm going, where the hell is my dog? So I'm going upstairs, I'm going downstairs, and I pushed the lift, and the lift returned and the doors open, and there's Buster on the inside, like he'd just gone for some ride somewhere. So, mate, I'm cleaning this up. Daryl is wailing. He offered me no help whatsoever. He's on the ground crying. Anyway, so that would be on security vision somewhere, mate, at Network 10. Someone's had a good laugh at that, I would have thought.
And never brought the dog again?
I never brought it up, and I took one of the kids in one day to Channel 10. They were only very young, and they proceeded to start telling my boss this story. And I'm like, no.
Do you want to be left in the world? No.
Georgie, you can come in here anytime when you tell us stories like that.
What else have you got? We want info. I remember watching, it's probably similar era. It's in the 10 MotoGP era.
Yep.
Was there a trip to Germany where you guys, you mentioned about going to trips and going to F1 races and stuff like that, and you were supposed to call a European or a German Grand Prix, I think it's Sachsenring from memory. So it's the old
East Germany, mate.
East Germany, yeah, that's
absolutely
right.
Yeah, awesome track. But awesome track.
You didn't.
No. They properly love their bikes there. Mm. So people would come up with these flip folders wanting autographs of Daryl, who'd won the German Grand Prix and stuff. Anyway, on race morning, I woke up and I had this massive balance issue. I couldn't stand properly, and
it wasn't a big night on the turf.
Not at all. Far from it. You know what I'm like. So I went to the Clinica Mobile, the MotoGP doctors. And they said to me, mate, you've had some crisis in there. We can't really do anything for you. And I'm like, guys, just give me painkillers. Just get me through.
Because you're there to call the race from the track.
We'd been at Valencia Formula One the week before, and then I think Sachsenring the week after, and with a cool little stopover at Nürburgring along the way. And anyway, so I end up in an ambulance going to this hospital in Chemnitz, which looks like, on the outside, a relic from the war. Daryl, the bike guys are real funny with hospitals, right? Like, they don't like.
Funnily enough. Yeah.
They don't like going in them. So Daryl never came and visited me. The first time I saw him was when he picked me up on the Monday out the front. And the doctor said to me, I had to go through a period of them making sure that I would be okay to fly and all that sort of stuff. I couldn't get out of there fast enough, mate. I hate hospitals. So anyway, I got out of there. I got back to Sydney and I was diagnosed with a thing called an intercanicular acoustic neuroma, which is like a tumor on the brain, but non-cancerous, thankfully. A lot of people go through far worse, but it ends up near your, in my particular case, it ends up near your facial nerve and your hearing nerve, and can be quite slow growing. Left untreated, it can lead to all sorts of complications, like leaning on the brain and things. So first doctor I visited said, mate, you're going to need some pretty invasive surgery here. We're going to have to put this cage around your head and hold it all together afterwards. And I'm like, whoa, no way.
So this has gone from a great trip overseas to holy hell.
My life's changing here. What's going on? And I have 6 to 8 high school buddies who I'm super tight with to this day, mate. We've all gone off and done different things, and 2 of them are in the medical industry, 1 in radiography and 1 around MRI machines. And they both said to me, why don't you try going to the Alfred in Melbourne and see this doctor, and he's quite good, and just get a second opinion. And so I went there, and I had some very direct radiation, a non-invasive treatment that Touchwood, mate, has worked to treat. Mm. And this kind of leads to something else that you and I spoke about off air, and that is, while I was there getting treatment for this and having a follow-up, Jace Richards happened to be there at the time getting some treatment. So I was sitting there. I'd told no one about this stuff. Sarah knew, my wife. That was about it. And so Charlotte walked in, and Jason's wife, and she said, what are you doing here? You know. And so I just told her the story, and we shot the breeze for a bit. And she goes, he's having treatment here. You want to come and see him? And I said, sure. And sorry, mate.
You're all right.
So we walked up to the treatment area. I'd never seen a chemotherapy, treatment area before, and they're all in kind of like Jason recliner lounge type things. It's quite open. They're all together, and they could talk to each other. And, man, he was the life of the room. His smile lit up the room. It was like he was interested in everyone else's issues or the way they were dealing with it rather than his own.
That's why I was late to everything.
Amazing. He's an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And, he confided in me at that stage. It was quite serious, quite heavy. But it's like his own issues were of minimal importance. He was there for everyone else, mate. So I'd known him from various things along the way with supercars, obviously, and I knew what a good bloke he was. Sarah said to me later, she goes, you remember this day. You know, you're quite lucky. And to see the way he dealt with it was a great, great example, mate.
Yeah. It puts it all into perspective, that's why he's in the Hall of Fame. He doesn't have piles of race wins to his name in supercars or Bathurst wins or champions trophies.
Yep.
He was the champion of that stuff, of how we cope with all of that.
He wasn't religious, and I was asked by the family. There was a couple of us that were considered, but I was asked by the family, would I effectively MC the funeral? Mm. And that remains to this day one of the toughest and yet proudest things that I've done, mate. He, you know, we covered kind of all bases from family to racing to whatever else. And it was a lovely send off for him.
Yeah. So in terms of the issues in Germany, that's all sweet now?
It's all sweet
there's,
now, mate.
There's nothing that lingers or keep an eye on?
Oh, no, no. It knocked me around at the time. There's no doubt about that. But I've had to go every couple of years for a little checkup. The one I'm about to have, it'll be like you don't need another one for 10 years. It's touch wood, my friend. It's good.
The funny thing, though, out of all this, because we go serious, but we'll bring it back up.
Yep.
Watching that Saxon Rig Grand Prix was a train wreck.
Oh, mate.
It was a train wreck. But the funniest thing, now this is where, and sorry to our listeners to go back into things here a little bit, but at the time, if you might remember, the producer that was with you over there was a bloke called Paul Mullen.
Yes.
Who was my producer when I started on Supercars TV for the first couple of years with the support races and the like. And he had told me in the aftermath of what was going on there. So there was this mad panic rush with you out, Gonski, no chance to stand, sit, commentate, do anything. So Daryl's now
the lead caller,
which is not his gig. It's not his role. It's not what he was there to do.
Yep.
And I think, as you mentioned earlier, the late Ken Wooten, Jerno, was a great motorbike guy, and a very solid commentator too. Just happened to be there. Excuse me, can you please come on in here? Yeah, what are we doing? I'm calling the race for Australia. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have even known, but behind the scenes, it was absolute chaos. Yep. But because we couldn't see it here, everyone just thought, well, where's Rusty gone? Has he taken a night off here? It was a very extreme way for you to get a holiday.
I love my five-toed mate, and he did a very good job that day. He stepped up, Daz.
It's funny, too, when things like that happen, when Diffy goes and falls. I'm not meaning it's funny that those things happen, but it's funny how when those things do happen, that then it's a, oh, crap.
Yep.
What do we do next?
Yeah. I mean, to get back to...
But we always seem to find a way through no matter what it is.
Always find a way, and tight team is key, mate. And that was one of David's great strengths, that he brought together a group of people that you would, you know, you'd give your right arm for. Mm. And, you know, in those moments, it's never a problem to dig a bit deeper and help out. Yeah.
In July this year, it's a very special
month. Oh, my God.
Now, no matter when you're listening to this podcast, if it's before July... Are you going to have a 50th bash?
I don't know. I had a 40th bash under pressure. Seriously, you got to have something.
Well, we know that you don't deal well with peer pressure.
So I'll probably capitulate to that, won't I?
If you see Rusty at around this year of the Shannon's Australian Motor Racing Championships or whatever it's called this year, it's different, isn't it?
Yep.
Go and wish him happy birthday and go and ask for an invite to his party.
Yeah, 50. I'm going to be 50. So I've got the salt and pepper to prove it. It's a milestone I'm not really looking forward to.
Embrace it.
Apparently I've got to.
It's better to keep plussing years than not plussing years. So we've covered Buster the Dog. We've covered the Saxon Ring. We've covered VATV. We've covered Rusty's Garage. We've covered the birthday party that you're throwing and inviting everybody apparently. To, which is so kind of you.
I'm tied with my money, mate. Don't do this to me.
You know, like per head costs are out of control at venues these days, and they're going to want drink cards and they're going to want food packages and parking, and we're going to have to hire Rod Laver Arena at this rate.
No.
No, we won't be like that. We've touched on a little bit and it's the rise and fall of things.
Yep.
The rub of the green, a bit of luck here, a downer there, a lost gig here, a gain gig there. When you departed Supercars and you headed off to New Zealand, was the plan that you wanted to stay, or was there no deal for you to stay and you decided to go?
I
know at the time, and the quote was, after long chats with management, we've agreed to a change. So to me, that always implied that it wasn't really your decision.
No.
But clearly, out of those things, you wouldn't have been able to do all the other things that you've done since. But tell me about I don't want to delve, and I don't want to.
I'm not diving for
a headline, but I think it's fair that we have a discussion about it because it was almost like this has happened again from how you described the previous iteration of not calling.
I was warned by someone that I respect immensely to not go there in the first place, and I didn't listen. And that's not to go back to supercars. And that's not a slight on any of the people behind the scenes there now, and the front line in particular. I mean, they're my mates. The commentary team in particular, they're my mates. The reason that I think I was told that is because they just knew it would be different to that halcyon period that I went through for all sorts of reasons.
Completely different.
For all sorts of reasons,
but they're all the 10 era of 97 to 06, the 7 era of 7 to 14.
Special, mate, special.
And then the Fox era slash 10 era of 15 onwards. They are all, yes, there are some common people, but they are having, I wasn't in the 10 era.
Yep.
I was only in the 7 era, and I haven't really been in the Fox 10 era, just on the fringes with 10 in recent years. They are all completely different beasts, eras, people, people who are the heads of departments, methodologies.
Yep.
They are all, and everyone's got their own. That was the best days because usually it's the one that you're involved in. But I mean, I'm really interested in your take.
So there were some discussions naturally that happened on. Big on not revealing specifics, mate, because contractually I just don't do that. Sure. But in overview terms, there were discussions. We went with a very, what I think was a very fair thing, something that was positioned well in terms of what I could offer. I felt the need to offer a bit of what we've spoken about here earlier in the podcast, and that is the human side, not the, I mean, the technical side is done so well by Crompo, by, you know, even Larko now, mate. There's just, to be clear here, there's absolutely no angst with Larko. No, not at all, mate, not at all. He was the logical guy for them to go after. I was probably disappointed with a couple of key people behind the scenes, who I won't name.
Is it more, not the people themselves, but the way things unfold? Because that's my experience. And I put my hand up.
You judge a person by what they say and do, and I take things very much on face value. And as I say, mate, I'm a worker, not a politician. So I probably, on reflection, should have done some of that stuff a bit better. I feel like, things were said to me, but in the lead up, in the months leading up to that decision making period, and then what really played out was 180 of what we were being told, and that I don't like. I'd rather straight talk. I'd rather you come to me in
tell
April
me no.
and say, "Tell me no." I'm happy with that. I'm no problem with it. I'd actually respect you more. So I lost respect for the person that didn't do that, and then when it actually went down, mate, this person decided to not really use an agent, but I was using an agent at the time. They just decided that they would call them. Not even call me or speak face to face to me, and it's one of the very few times, Noons, that I've hit the roof, mate. I don't. It
takes
often,
a fair bit to get you to the roof. To do.
So I vented and said my piece, and at the bottom line here is that Greg Rust does not have a mortgage on a job with V8 Supercar or Supercars. They can chop and change and do what they like. That is their decision, and I'm a big believer, as I've said a couple of times here now, in reflecting on what I could have done better. And there are things that I could definitely have done there. But I was disappointed at the way that it played out. But importantly, I wanted to be eyes forward and I wanted to move on. So I've gone back very recently.
Because you're in Adelaide,
of the way
doing
I was
the big
in Adelaide. Yeah, and that's because of the way I chose to handle it, I think, mate.
I know.
Okay.
Well, I know. There's no doubt that's why.
Yeah.
When you approach those things that way.
Yeah.
The swings and roundabouts of the world. I only speak from experience because I've been out of the world there of television and come back in and drop back out and in and out. I can only say that I know it's right because I've experienced it as well.
And to your credit, you've handled it perfectly. You know, so they're not easy things to do. I'm a believer in eyes forward, how you choose to deal with it at the time, and they're my friends, mate. The constituents in the pit lane, I love to this day. I love the code, the sport to this day. Yeah, there were a couple of challenges there with people that disappointed me a little. But has it changed my relationship with any of the commentary team?
No.
I just wanted to – what I wanted to do, Sarah and I had bought a place on the east coast of the North Island in New Zealand back in 2015. It was a little something for in later life that we might do. When this went down, we were like, okay, kids are about to start high school. We can either exercise this now and get them settled. I wouldn't want to do it to them during high school.
That's hard.
Yeah. And so anyway, mate, we hit the go button. We made a significant lifestyle change. I operate now, as you know, largely on a freelance basis. And I'm playing in worlds that I think are a little more aligned to what the kids do because I want to. I think it's good to experiment and play in those fields. And I'm happy, mate. That's the bottom line. I have great variety. I've done some stuff with you with the TCR series, which I found really fresh and good. I've gone back and done some stuff with the Supercars guys. And, life's good, mate.
It's the way to be.
Yeah.
If you're happy, everything else can fall around that. That's really easy. I know that's always hard to talk about. I like to add a bit of light and shade. I think it's important that in all things, we talk about the good stuff. There's no guarantee. And I have the same theory as you, and I've said it in recent times with in my world. There is no God-given right that we can hold a microphone and stand in a pit lane or a commentary box or whatever it is. And I get it, what you're saying, because I have the same mentality and theory. Yes, it's sometimes something I'd rather have been doing, but the reality is there's no mortgage on it. There's no it's not written in stone somewhere that I must do it or that someone else must not. So that's just the nature of it. Tell you what might be a good approach now.
Okay, here we go.
It's the National Motor Racing Museum's Couch Racer Questions.
I'm nervous.
No, nothing to be nervous about. This won't hurt much.
Much.
it's a big thank you to our great mates at the National Motor Racing Museum at Mount Panorama Bathurst. They are now open 6 days a week, 9 to 4:30. Not Tuesdays. Don't go on Tuesday.
But I love it there. It's an awesome place, and they're constantly changing.
Yep. And there's been an exhibition that's going at the moment with the Bathurst 12-hour cars being celebrated. And later in the year, there's a few plans for some different exhibitions and the like. Awesome. And they had a Craig Lowndes one last year. But by the way, have you kept any of your race suits from over the years?
I have kept some race suits from different things. Yes,
we like to ask people about their memorabilia.
I have. I did a job for RPM where I co-drove with Simon Evans at Targa Tasmania in a Camry.
Oh, jeez.
And I actually had to go and learn proper pace noting with Coral Taylor. That was a great my grey matter isn't good, mate, so that was quite a learning experience. I've kept the Toyota race suit, so for a time I thought I was a Toyota factory person. A couple of Channel 10 suits, a supercars suit, something else in there too. Oh, a McDonald's one. Red Bull had a billy cart derby.
Yes, I do remember. Yeah.
I did that for a bit of fun too. So, yeah, there's a couple that I've kept there from over the years. The kids won't want them.
If we see them on eBay, Dad, we know what's happening.
What's this for?
But if there's ever dress-ups at school for racing drivers, you never know. Anything else in memorabilia?
The great Daryl Beatty, when I finished at Channel 10 at the end of 2014 and I was doing my last MotoGP, he presented me with one of his Grand Prix helmets.
Cool.
And I treasure it to this day, mate, because he kept a couple of them. Obviously, there were some pretty decent crashes over his time. But a couple of us in the circle of friends have got them, mate. And, yeah, I love it. And he had a cool sort of little insignia on the back, which sort of tipped the hat to his love of helicopter flying back then. And he had a great line as well after losing five toes in a crash in 94 about hanging five in 95 and things like that. So there's that. I've kept, when I did the super karting back in the day, I lunched an engine of beauty. I think I can recall my dad opening it up going, oh, it's a bit of a milkshake in there, son, you know, with all the metal everywhere. So I kept a damaged piston from that. What else have I kept? I had our good friend William Hall and Bianchi model cars and things like that. I have an Alan Jones Glenn Seaton Falcon model car. And the reason for that is the first time I ever went for a ride in a supercar, I won it through a radio competition.
Was it your own radio show?
This is pre-radio. Yeah. It was Triple M, and I wasn't the first caller through. And it was like, who was the winner of the Adelaide Grand Prix and such and such and such? And the first caller through, you know, Aaron from wherever, got it wrong. And when I answered it, I was caller number two. I got it right. So I got a hot lap with Jonesy, and I can always remember going down back in the H-pattern gearbox days, Falcon. We're going down. There were three people that won rides, and Jonesy walks in and he looks at all three of them. I don't know what the process was for choosing it. And he points at me and he goes, "You're up first." And I go, "Wow!" So my life three times with Alan Jones. You know that, then Eastern Creek, and then Channel 10 Formula One years later. Anyway, first time we're going down pit lane. The supercar's kind of clunking its way. It was just a great feeling. And he looks across at me and he goes, "Hey, mate. We're on old tyres and they're cold. Hang on." And he dumped the clutch out of pit lane and away it went. And it was just this sort of sideways ride that I'll never forget, mate. Yeah.
At least he didn't tell you to F off like he did in 98.
No. So.
We'll get back to the podcast in just a moment. But I wanted to tell you about our good friends at Timken, a world leader in bearings and mechanical power transmission products and services. Now, you might know their name and recognise their logo, but did you know that Timken products have been to the surface of Mars? It's true. Timken partnered with NASA to design and develop bearings for its Mars rover missions Spirit, Opportunity and Curiosity, as well as for NASA's next scheduled mission to the Red Planet that's set to blast off in July 2020. The Curiosity rover used Timken bearings in its descent to the planet, as well as in the carousel system that positions the rover sample cups for gathering and analysing rock, soil and atmosphere, plus two bearings that run the vacuum pump that supports the rover's analytical equipment. Those bearings are just 6.35 millimetres, yes, millimetres in size, and they rotate at 100,000 RPM. It's amazing. We'll bring you some more cool facts about Timken in each episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast this year, but now it's back to the podcast. Let's get into the National Motor Racing Museum Couch Racer questions. Yes. We open it up to the fans, and they give us lots of questions. We can't get through them all, but we'll race through as many as we can. Peter Murray, it's not Pete Murray the singer, is
ooh,
it?
Ooh.
No, I don't think it is. Loves Rusty's Garage. Who's been your favourite interviewee so far?
Ooh, I loved Larko.
How many beers did you have while you did that?
Between us, well, I think we had three each, and we went literally out into the bush. And he found this little, it was so Larko, mate. We found this, you know, a couple of logs to sit on, chewed the fat, and we were finished. We were in the dark when it finished. It was, yeah, that's great proof of what we're talking about before. You know, often it's the storytellers. He was excellent.
He is a storyteller, that's for sure. Zach Caban, who Zach works in the motorsport industry here in Australia. The great man, I think he's talking about you, has done just about everything you can do in Aussie motorsport. Ooh. So what's the one international event that you'd love to commentate if given the chance?
Ooh. I went to Le Mans in 2015 in a media capacity but not in a commentary sense. That would be quite cool.
How's your French?
Bonjour.
Bonjour. Renault.
Zach, to be honest with you, it's actually about ticking off a couple of bucket list things like any of your listeners may would want to do. You know, I've not been to an Indy 500. That's got to be done.
What?
I've been to Daytona. I've been to Laguna. I've been to the British Grand Prix. Yeah, so there's some things like that I want to do. Yep.
So just to be there rather than even to call.
Even if I was in the fan, in the stand rather.
Drinking a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Saren is a long-time sleuth.
Yep.
Viewer/listener, how did it come about that you had a test day with Brad Jones Racing at Winton in 2008 with Cameron McConville as your teacher for the day?
I've met Saren. He's a good guy, actually. This is a good story. So Cam McConville was doing some TV work with us at 10 at the time with Formula One and the like, and he thought it would be a good idea to do a role swap. So he sort of pitched it to, I think, Steve Wood at the time, the producer, and off we went. And, mate, I can vividly recall Kim Jones slamming the door of the WOW Commodore going, if you fence this thing, that way's the gate, keep walking, don't come back. So my heart was nervous. And I went I don't have a good relationship with Winton for some reason in a attempt to drive capacity.
I haven't brought it up at all.
So those final two turns is where the trouble has happened on the relatively new extension to the circuit there. So I'm coming down, it was like last run of the day, and I'm coming down to that second last corner. There's a couple of bumps under braking and the thing turned pretty decently to the left, and somehow I caught it and didn't fence it. So reporters should not be racing drivers, Aaron. That's the bottom line. Great experience, though. Great experience to H Patton Gearbox. The other yarn, mate, that I don't know if I've ever told.
We like these ones.
Okay, so Crompo in the RPM era decides, let's go to Malala. I'll get the HRT three-seater, the ride car.
Which was the Lowndes barrel roll car that we talked about earlier, reborn.
We've got a day at Malala. They must have had to put some sponsors and people through in the morning, but we'll have the car for the afternoon. I'd like to decode some of the things we talk about in motor racing, the acronyms, the nicknames, the whatever else. So we do this thing where we drove around the track and we stop and talked about some of those things. And then he decides, let's cut some laps with Crompo driving, me in the passenger seat, and then we'd swap at the end. But this is in the early days of not early days, but in the, like everything now is all digital and you can run multi-angle type things. For this shoot for the day, we had one onboard camera and we had to keep moving its position in the car. So you had to kept having to do takes.
Yeah.
So Scafie was there in his HRT gear, and after each run, I'm getting greener and greener because I'm sitting in the passenger seat and I had a little sheet of paper with notes that I could keep down by the footwell where no one would see that I could glance to for questions to Crompo as we're driving because we'd get the sound bites. Oh, mate. It's like Scafie's wailing. He's leaning over the fence and he's mimicking vomiting, like trying to get me to vomit at the time. Oh, and the very first thing I did... Crompo's and the passengers. Those guys aren't good passengers, right?
No.
So I go roaring out of the Malala pit lane, turn right, and coal tyres, and the two left-hand side tyres venture off into the dirt and grass briefly, and we come back on, and Crompo went silent for the rest of the ride. There you go.
There's actually a follow-on question. Jordan Northcote, who's another regular sleuther, he says you've been given the chance to drive some pretty cool stuff over time.
Yes.
But what's the car that's most surprised you that you've driven?
Ooh, that's hard. Mm. I continually, when I talk about these things, sound like the last car was the most exciting one because it's just the chance to drive it. What's the thing that's... I drove... I'll tell you what it was. It was Rick Kelly's Formula Holden at Oran Park.
Oh.
And
fast.
Fast. So go there with the Barana racing team for the day. Rico had to do some testing in the morning and they were really good. They gave me 20-odd laps probably in it.
Your neck would have been buggered by the end of that.
Yeah, and I'd never driven a car with proper wings on it before. Ooh. They were great cars back then, those things, and on the Grand Prix track at Oran Park. So that, I wouldn't say it surprised me, but it was really eye-opening. That was It was super cool to do that one. Yep.
Rob James.
Oh, yes.
Who does work.
No, Rob James.
The Rob James does work at Motorsport Australia, we should point out. He says, do the dog in the studio story. Done it. And do the Peter Brock gotcha call in New Zealand. I think you've told this one before, but it's you can't have any podcast without a Brock story. So you got him in New Zealand.
This underscored how good the bloke was for me. So we're driving back. Typically, we would get a commentator's van at Tarago, and we'd all commute together.
And this is you, Crompton.
Matty White, I reckon.
Matty White, probably.
Daryl.
Definitely Graham Mort Brown, the ex-Brock team who worked
well
with
done.
10. It's probably five or six of you together in a Tarago is a dangerous combination.
Dangerous thing. And as you know, the road trip from Pukekohe to Auckland, where we'd stay at night time and stuff, is about, call it an hour, right? An hour trip. So we're driving along. And I think this was actually one of the rare times Crompo might have actually been driving the van. Normally he plays passenger. But anyway, I think he was driving and we're cutting through the traffic and we spot Brock up ahead of us in a rental car, I think a Commodore. And I said to Mort, because he and Brock were very close, as you know, I said, Mort, give me his number. Let's have some fun here. I love a gotcha. I love gotcha gags. So I turn my phone to silent. I ring Brock, and as we're edging closer in the traffic, you can see him put the earpiece in his ear to answer the call. And when he answers it, I go into full Kiwi radio announcer mode, and I say, oh, g'day, Pete, it's Chris here from Hauraki FM. How are you? And there's sort of a bit of silence, and he goes, oh, good, thanks. I mean, back in the day, mate, when you were at Plastics, you would have given them a listing of all their requirements for the day, would you not? Of what, you know.
You hold a motorsport PR.
Yeah,
they would have known something was going to be on.
Clearly, this is not on the list.
No.
All right. Oh, good, thanks. Ever the pro. He goes, good, thanks. So, you know, I said, oh, Pete, I'd love it if we could have a quick chat about today's action at Pukekohe. He said, sure. So I said, just stand by for a minute. I'll put you through to the studio and we'll get some tape rolling. And I'm looking around and Beatty's on the floor wailing and I can't keep a straight face. So I turn away and try not to look at them. And anyway, away we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Well, joining us now is one of the absolute legends of Australian motorsport, Peter Brock. And, you know, off we go. And he starts talking about how good Murph was and Scafie and what a great day. And anyway, we shoot the breeze, two or three questions. Oh, Pete, what are you doing now? And he goes, you wouldn't believe it. He goes, I'm beside this van load of crazy supercars fans. By this stage, Crompo is right beside him. So I can see Brock. I'm looking at Brock. I'm on the phone. I'm looking at him. He's pointing to his back then. He had like a Nokia earpiece thing or whatever it was. And he's pointing at it going, I'm on. He mouths the words, I'm on the radio. We know. So I said, what are you doing now? Pete goes, oh, yeah, there's this carload of crazed supercars fans beside me. Sorry, I'm doing that in a Kiwi accent. Peter's talking. And I said, they're not in a blue Tarago, are they? And he looked at me. Because I'm saying that and looking at him at the same time out the window, and his mouth dropped. He knew he'd been had. And, of course, this went like wildfire through the supercars paddock. Scafie thought it was hilarious. But this sums up Peter for you. We pulled up at a set of lights as we're coming into Auckland. He dropped the window, and we were all wailing. And he looked across and he said, you bastard. He said, I will get even with you for this. Sadly, mate, that day never came. Mm. But not all athletes take gotchas like that the right way, and he took it the right way, and he thought it was just awesome.
Yeah, that's ace. Yeah. That is such a good story, and it doesn't work if you don't do the accent, so that's worked very well. Carl Phillips asks, is Greg Murphy as much of a pain in the ass neighbour as we'd expect him to be?
So he and I, where I live now, not quite neighbours as in over the fence, but we can see each other's houses in the distance type thing. Mate, you know what? We're both so busy. We don't catch up often enough, but the two families get on exceptionally well. He is actually the reason that I married Sarah, because they're high school buddies, the pair of them. So
what?
So, yeah. So,
hang on. Rewind.
So, okay,
rewind.
Okay. So he rings me at, I was at the Brisbane Motor Show back in whatever year it was, 2000 or something or other, doing just MC stuff on one of the car stands. And he rings me and he goes, mate, I've got this great girl. You've got to meet her.
Has he tried to set you up previously to this?
No. This is the first time. Right. This is the first time.
So he's 100% like, one from one.
Okay, mate. Yeah, whatever. And I learn later on that old Mr. Murphy's bit of a cupid. He set up Matthew Crawford, who engineer it at HRT, true, and his wife Jasmine.
That's right.
And he's responsible for Sarah and I. So,
is there anything he cannot do?
Perfect match with Greg Murphy, exactly. So, yeah. So anyway, there's the connection. But we don't often catch up. But we are going to do. We do some fun things, like we're about to go on a track day, a motorcycle track day north of where we are, up around Taupo, which will be quite good. We occasionally get out and have some fun, which is awesome, mate. Yeah,
Greg squared.
Greg squared. Greg and Greg.
Greg, the Greg and Greg show. Just put Greg.
I don't have a Kiwi accent. Lee Diffie rings from America and says, if you ever get an accent, we're going to disown you.
We will too. I think you're safe. Chad Marriott.
Yes.
You thought it was going to be Chad Nalon, yes, then, didn't you? What's the worst situation you've been in when interviewing on track?
Oh, this is a beauty.
Oh, well, you go straight to the story here. Okay.
So, Winton had not long. What is it with me and Winton?
You and Winton do not get along.
So the extension hadn't been opened all that long, and we were there for a GTP race, I think it was.
Oh, so the Super Touring support
category. No. I want to say,
was it a V8 support
race? It was a V8 support race.
Okay. I'm trying to position in the timeline. It's about 99-ish or thereabouts.
I can't remember. It was Jimmy Richards v Bowie. So in that
Ferrari and Porsche.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm down in that pit lane. But back then, in the early part, remember they used to have the finish line was still up at the old spot.
Yep.
So you're in the pit lane to get, you know, information and interviews, but you're trying to keep an eye on what's happening at the top end. So I I went, mate, at the end of the race. It was a tight finish between the pair of them, and I went to Jimmy Richards and I said, Jimmy, congratulations, you know, how does that feel type thing or whatever. And he goes, actually, mate, I came second, Bowie won it. Oh, I felt about this big.
Oh, dear. I remember did you get hailed on at Sandown one day? Remember hailed for the Sandown?
Yeah, I got hailed on there. Seen some funny stuff happen over time because you just have to be not afraid of that. You know, just get out, get in the elements. It's good.
It was literally elements that day. Robert Jamison, he's the last one of our National Motor Racing Museum Couch Racer questions, and we'll move on to the shootout. Who was the person that made you the most nervous to interview?
I interviewed Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly once for...
That's awesome.
Mate, it was awesome. So I got asked, would I interview them for some content for Big Pond, it was back then, and it would go on the Bathurst big screens and the like. And I'd never seen anything like it. We went to this hotel in Sydney. The producers had five hotel rooms, all side by side, all booked out. All the media were in each of them. So, you know, Koshy and Mel from Sunrise were in one and so on and so on. And Benny Green, our cameraman friend who you know quite well, he was the camo on the day. And we set up in this hotel room. and I was shitting myself because they're proper Hollywood stars, you know. But I love – of all the people – you know, I love Flying High. I like that slapstick humor. I love Will Ferrell as a comedian and an actor, mate.
Favorite Will Ferrell movie is?
Well, I like Talladega Nights, but I'm a big fan of Anchorman. Massive fan of Anchorman. Yeah. So,
old school?
Hey?
Old school? Have you seen that?
Yeah, no, I don't know if I have seen
that. Oh, mate, we're streaking through the quad.
Ooh.
Yeah. Watch the movie, you'll get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's where Frank the Tank comes from. James Courtney's thing when he...
So anyway, long story short, I do some homework and I'm trying to thread ways between previewing Talladega Nights and the fact that John C. Reilly
was in Days of Thunder.
I started asking some of those questions, and I came back to Anchorman. You know, how would you have handled this situation, or blah 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 blah, and they got into it. They just totally were off the cuff, really engaging, and at the end of it, the door opens and it's the PR minder pointing the finger at the watch. You know, come on, 10 minutes is up. 10 minutes is up. You got to go to the next one, type thing. And Will Ferrell looked at the PR lady and said, "Hey, these are good guys. We're enjoying this, you know." Like, and Ben Green, that's the only photo I've got of it. At the end of it, said, "Boys, would you mind if we got a photo?" And they said, "No, absolutely not." So I was daunted by it, but blown away by how good they were.
It turned out pretty good.
I've kept it on DVD or something too.
Oh, you've got to dig it out. We also do the top 10 shootout. Yes. And this is for Motor Focus, who is your home of quality scale models. They stock all the big brands, heaps more. Visit their website, motorfocus.com.au. You might be able to buy a WOW Cameron McConville Commodore model.
I love it. Yeah. I keep things like that that have a link to me.
You should. Yeah. Or you can stop in next time you're in Queensland. Go visit them. Unit 9, 1 Stockwell Place in Archerfield. So
that address again, Aaron?
Hang on. When you've got Greg Russell, the best voice ever, read the highlighted piece here.
Visit their website, motorfocus.com.au, or stop in and visit them. Unit 9, 1 Stockwell Place. That's in Archerfield in Queensland. Archerfield, home of a great famous speedway that I've been to as well.
And I'm going to get an invoice for that read, cool. No doubt about it. So the Motor Focus Top 10 Shootout is just a fancy word association. I touched on it at the start of the show. You will tell me the first thing that comes into your head.
I'm going to fail miserably.
No, you won't. Yes. I'll let you have two or three words. Okay. By the end of this, you'll probably get down to one.
Okay.
This is going to be easy because we've spoken about a lot of these people already, but you need to give me a word that springs to mind.
Yep.
Barry Sheen.
Funny.
Bill Woods.
Thorough.
Neil Crompton. And you can't use the same word.
Oh, God, I can't say thorough. Perfection.
Lee Diffie.
Stirrer.
Mick Doohan.
Committed, mega committed.
We'll put a hyphen, that's one word.
Yep.
Oran Park.
I need a word to describe close to my heart because I got to drive there in a go-kart and a few other things. To me, it's a venue we really miss, mate. So let's say atmosphere.
Nice. Super Tourers.
Grounding.
Amaru Park.
Home.
Marcus Ambrose.
Respect.
And Mark Webber.
I can't use that same word again, can I? It is an extension of that to, I know we're wrapping up here. He and I saw one another at an event in New Zealand recently. It's like we're having a conversation like this, mate. And, you know, I'm about to do a podcast. And he said, "Oh, mate, I've got ammo on that guy. Give me a call. You know, so, you know, genuine is the word I would use, genuine.
Nice. I think that's a great way to finish it out. You have survived the Motor Focus Top 10 shootout. You did not put it in the fence. You didn't lock a brake. Did a nice job. And I think our National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions, we had heaps more, but we just couldn't get through them all. Cool. I know we've probably not covered a whole pile of other things. We've touched on some stuff that our listeners might have heard on Rusty's Garage and some other places and the like, but I think we've covered on a few other things as well, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. And
You send me the list of those questions. How about the ones I didn't get to? I'll go to the comments section on your Facebook page when the pod comes out, and I'll answer those ones then. How about that?
That's a good deal.
Cool.
Do I get an invoice for that as well?
You will. Yeah.
No, man, you this won't. Has been an ex- you know. This has been an expensive podcast. Greg Russ, thank you again for sitting down. Whole pile of fun.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you.
So there you go. Very big thank you to Greg Russ for stopping by V8 Sleuth HQ, not just for the chat, but also getting on the Dyson upright vacuum and giving the place a bit of a spruce up. Check out the video on Instagram if you haven't seen it already on our V8 Sleuth page. And don't forget, wish him a happy birthday when he turns the big 5-0 in July. We might all be out of luck for a party invite, though. If you're enjoying the V8 Sleuth podcast, make sure to leave us a review, help spread the word, and don't forget to subscribe to ensure you don't miss any episodes as they come out. They'll be coming out almost every week throughout 2020, even as we bunker down amid COVID-19. Now, if you're looking for a bit of reading material at home, we're having a stock take sale in the V8 Sleuth online bookshop. You could pick up a copy of Cars of the King or the Falcon Files magazines, our illustrated history book of Ford at Bathurst with a photo of every car from Ford to race between 1963 and 2018. And speaking of 2018, we have copies of the official book of the 2018 Super Cheap Auto Bathurst 1001 by Craig Lowndes and Steve Richards. Head to the V8 Sleuth website, v8sleuth.com.au, click on Bookshop to snap yourself up a bargain. And sign up too to the V8 Sleuth newsletter while you're there, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram so you don't miss out on any new offers or new products as they come up. Until then, we'll catch you next time on the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Timken.